Sorry about the clock. Good morning and welcome to the first serious podcast from Crow Hill. That was a little bit of serenade to a cuckoo, which is just to remind me how serious to take all this. So this is my first real podcast. I tried one the other day, just a few seconds, and it was sort of silly, as I'm sure this one will be also. All right, today is Saturday, March the 5th, and Friday nights in Crow Hill Manor is pizza, video, ice cream night. So I'll start off today with a quick review of what we were watching last night. We started off with my cousin Vinny from Clean Films. If you haven't heard of Clean Films, it's something you really ought to check out. It's a great service. They take movies and cut out the sex scenes and bad words, which, in the case of something like A Beautiful Mind, leaves you with a choppy, sort of weird movie because there's just far too many swear words in there. But with something like My Cousin Vinny, it works out fine. They take out a couple of foul words and that sort of thing, and you end up with a good movie that you can watch with the kids. So we watched My Cousin Vinny last night, which was a lot of fun. It's a really fun movie. It's about these kids who go down to Alabama and get mistakenly charged with a murder, and then they call their cousin from New York, Brooklyn, who's a budding lawyer, who's never really tried a case, and he's going to come down and try to get him out of trouble. And Marissa Tomei plays this great Brooklyn princess, and her attitudes and her expressions are just great to watch. So that one was fun. I was surprised the kids actually enjoyed it. I thought it was maybe a little too heady for them, but they got into it and thought it was fun. And then later on we watched Tender Mercies. I love Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall is, in a way, the opposite of Marissa Tomei. He acts just by kind of standing there, not even by talking or by making expressions or anything. He's just there. It's really interesting to watch him and figure out what it is about Robert Duvall's acting that is appealing. I really like the guy. I like watching him. But he doesn't seem to do anything. I'm not sure what it is. Anyway, Tender Mercies is an okay movie. Robert Duvall is good, but it's just sort of, slow moving and not much to it, I think. If you really want a good Robert Duvall movie, you have to watch Secondhand Lions, which is a fantastic movie. Now, recently, on Friday nights, typically, you see, we'd have dinner, we'd have pizza, ice cream, we'd be watching a movie with the kids, and then the kids would go to sleep, and my wife and I and a couple of the older kids would watch another movie. And that got interrupted recently because Enterprise got moved to Friday at 8. Now, Enterprise is the only show we really watch. So typically, we'll start watching a movie, we'll watch it until like 7:55, then we have to stop, then we have to watch Enterprise, and then we have to go back and finish the movie, which is an irritation. Last night, there was no new Enterprise, so it wasn't an issue. And as you probably know, Enterprise is in its death throes, and this is the final season, which is too bad. It's an okay show. So that's last night. This morning, took a little walk down to 7-Eleven to get a cup of coffee, and on the way, there's this park, and there's a trail through the park, one of these 7-foot-wide paved trails that runs through the woods that the Park Service likes to build in different places. It's a nice little trail. People can walk their dogs and that sort of thing. But every time I walk that trail, it makes me think what I'd like, I think would be a really nice weekend vacation, would be taking a walk through the woods like that. You know, you walk along a trail like that, you stop every few miles and get a cup of coffee or a soda or a beer or something. And just a nice, pleasant walk through the woods. Like, for example, if you were to take an area between two cities, let's say you took Washington and Baltimore, and set aside a green zone, just a relatively narrow slice between the two cities where you could have these trails, you could have bike trails or something like that. I think that is a nice thing to add to a community. It provides some area for wildlife and it provides some area for recreation. The trouble, of course, is when you have that kind of planning, you have to have planners. And when you have planners, they're inevitably busybodies and the type of people that, you know, in your neighborhood you don't like, who are always irritated at somebody's azalea bush or something. So, I don't know, it's a two-edged sword. It would be nice, but you'd have to pay a price to get that sort of thing. So, Real quickly, a review and comment on the news. This week there was an interesting story about the decline of atheism. It was an article in Christianity Today about atheism has been in decline. And it's an interesting article. You ought to take a look. You can get to it from my news bulletin board. Alistair McGrath and Wolfgang Pannenberg and some other scholars have been following. I'm sorry, Wolfhart Pannenberg. Wolfgang sounds better.
I just had the telephone ring on me, and I had to cut and edit this thing a little bit. I don't know if this is going to turn out right. Sorry, I'm not very good at this. Anyway, back to the article. Wolfhart Pannenberg and Alistair McGrath have been following atheism. And listen to this. There seems to be a growing consensus around the globe. Godlessness is in trouble. Atheism as a theoretical position is in decline worldwide, Munich theologian Wolfhart Pannenberg told UPI. His Oxford colleague, Alistair McGrath, agrees. Atheism's future seems increasingly to lie in the private beliefs of individuals rather than in the great public domain it once regarded as its habitat. Now, this reminds me of an attitude that you guys probably followed years ago, where people seem to think that atheism was on the march, you know, that that faith and belief was sort of an old medieval thing, and people were getting over that, and they were learning that it's all the silliness and the future lies in secularism. And you can see that in things like Star Trek. I mean, I like Star Trek, but generally speaking, they try to promote an attitude where faith is on the decline, and in the future, people really don't believe. They have other ways of dealing with ethics and other issues. They don't have a chaplain on the Enterprise. They don't, I think in one episode they actually had a chapel. But generally speaking, there's no religion, at least not among the enlightened people, either the stupid people on the planets who have funny markings on their forehead. They have religions, but on the Enterprise, you know, they don't believe. And there's this attitude that the future was in secularism, but I think the problem with that is that people are religious. Whether they like it or not, they are religious. They do believe. And there's something about the way we think. There's something about the way our brains work that we do believe. Now, that doesn't make it true, but that's just the way we are. And I think a true atheist would be someone like the Bene Gesserit in Dune. You see, they were all atheists, but they used religion. They realized the power of religion. And they use religion to manipulate people. Somebody like, who's that Scientology guy, L. Ron Hubbard, how he would be a true atheist. Somebody who understood that people are religious, and then used that knowledge to create a religion to get money or power or whatever he wanted to get out of all that. I think he's dead. But that's the true atheist. Somebody who understands that people are religious, and they will be religious, and then tries to use that for their own benefit. And that's what we have to watch out for. Because, you know, the garden variety atheists we've had in the past, there's no God, and they want to tell everybody there's no God, and who cares, you know? That's not going to get anywhere. People are religious. They will believe. They'll believe dumb things. Which gets back to that old saw. When people cease to believe in God, they don't believe nothing. They believe anything. And that's what we're seeing. People turn away from Christianity, and they become, you know, follow the New Age and all this other wacko stuff. So, I think we need to come to terms with the fact that we really need regulated, organized religion, because people will be religious. And you can either have screwball, stupid religions, where people are going around killing one another, or worshipping rocks, or whatever dumb things you want to do, or you can have an organized, sensible religion. And I think this is true whether you believe in God or not. Someone who doesn't believe in God should realize that we need to have organized religion to control, to regulate, to keep the religious side of man in check, because otherwise you'd have a bunch of silliness, and I think that's what we're seeing now. Anyway, in this article, it goes on, as British philosopher Anthony Flew, once as hard-nosed a humanist as any, mused concerning his back on his former belief, it is, for example, impossible for evolution to account for the fact that one single cell can carry more data than all the volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica put together. I haven't followed very closely this whole intelligent design thing. I followed it somewhat. But people simply aren't going to believe that something as complicated as a dog can happen by random mutation and selective selection, natural selection. people just aren't going to believe that. That's not the way our brains work. And once again, I'm not saying what's right and what's wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe dogs did happen by chance. But people simply don't think that way. That's not the way our brains work. When we are walking down the trail and we see four stones piled on top of one another, we say, aha, someone has marked this trail. And the odds of four stones falling on top of each other next to a trail are vastly better than the odds of a dog coming about by chance. By chance mutation and natural selection, of course. People object to saying it happened by chance because they say natural selection is not chance. Well, that's true, but the mutation part is chance. So people simply don't think that way. It's not the way our brains work. And until someone can reinvent the human brain and make us think a different way, we're going to believe that design points to a designer. And that's, I think, just the way it is. So anyway, this article, Atheism in Decline Worldwide, is pretty interesting and fun to look at. Now, I also had some posts this week about the various foolish statements of bishops. And, you know, this is really troublesome because I became Catholic in 1999, and I would really love to listen to the bishops. I really would. I'd like to look up to them. I'd like to hear what they have to say and follow their wise counsel. The trouble is they just don't give any wise counsel. They're a bunch of weirdos and fools most of the time. And I know that's hard to say and hard to hear, at least for the Catholics among you. The rest of you are probably saying, but the bishops just are incredibly unimpressive. It's got to the point where I think in order to maintain my sanity, it's just better to ignore them. They don't say anything I want to hear. And when I do listen to them, they sound like a bunch of morons. Like, for example, this bishop, Robert N. Lynch in Florida, is upset about the Terry Schiavo case, that both sides are so intractable, that they're so mad at each other. Well, of course they're mad at each other, for heaven's sakes. The parents want to save their daughter, and the Terry's former husband wants to kill her, wants to starve her to death. And he's concerned about the intractability of both sides. Hey, come on. What's supposed to be the compromise here? I joked on my blog that maybe they could compromise by cutting her in half, feeding half, and letting the other half die. I mean, that's kind of a gross thing to say, but what does the bishop expect here? What kind of compromise are they going to reach between somebody who wants to starve a woman to death and somebody who says, just let us feed her, please? Very, very odd. Now, a friend forwarded me an article on the Good Samaritan use of guns. And this is something that, I remember when I was a kid, my dad, a member of the NRA, and would get the NRA magazine, and they had a regular feature in there that would have, information about citizens using guns to prevent crime. And, you know, there was a time when people thought, oh, guns are so bad. If people have guns, then, you know, they'll use them in crime. But what's happened? We've had concealed carry laws passed in Florida and Virginia and a bunch of other places, and there isn't mayhem and bloodshed on the streets. As a matter of fact, you may remember years ago in Florida when they first passed the concealed carry law, there was an outbreak of violence against people in rental cars. Now think about that for a second. Why did the criminals start going after people in rental cars? Because, most likely, they were not from Florida. If they had, if they were from Florida, they might be packing. But if they were from Maryland, then they weren't. So the criminals would go after the people in rental cars, which just goes to show exactly the point of allowing citizens to carry weapons, which is criminals are afraid of citizens carrying weapons. And the gun control people basically want to disarm all the good people so that the bad people can prey on them without any concern. And it's obviously not their intent, but that's the unintended consequence of their idea. Now, there's also an interesting article by Marvin Olasky about a guy named Francis Schaeffer. If you haven't read any Francis Schaeffer, it's worth your time. You might want to go take a peek at some of his stuff. And Marvin Olasky argues that Francis Schaeffer was the one who got evangelicals back into politics and helped re-elect George Bush. Interesting article, take a peek. Otherwise, okay, now, I'm going to end with this. I had a proposal on my webpage for the next pope. Now, of course, I really don't like this idea of the pope is sick. Let's all talk about his successor. I want John Paul II to get better, and I hope he recovers, and wish him the best. But sooner or later, we're going to have another pope, and maybe that'll be 20 years from now. That'd be fine with me. But the next one, here are some ideas of what I'd like for him. First of all, I agree with the adage that power corrupts. Ford Acton was right, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we need to move away from having so much centralized power. For example, I don't think the Pope needs to appoint every bishop. Now, a while ago, the Pope had asked for people to comment on this issue. How could they redo the papacy so that it would be more acceptable to Anglicans and to Orthodox mostly, I think is where his target audience there. And there was no reaction. It was really rather depressing. People didn't take him up on it. I'd love to see more dialogue about that. How could the papacy be managed in a way that would be more acceptable? But along the lines of this whole power and prestige and everything, I really wish the bishops would get rid of this Your Eminence, Your Holiness kind of stuff, and the kissing rings and all that. You know, St. Paul signed his letters Paul, and Peter did likewise. You know, Peter signed Peter. But why does the Pope have to be Your Holiness, Holy Father, Your Eminence, Your Exalted Majesty, or whatever the heck they call him, as long as it's Joe? And what is this with these names like Pius and Innocent and all that? Paul called himself Chief Sinner. Why doesn't the Pope take that name? Why doesn't the Pope decide if he can't just go by Joe, why doesn't he go by Chief Sinner or Guilty or something along those lines? That would seem to me to have a lot more to do with the gospel than calling himself Pius. Now, the other issue the next Pope has to address is this whole question of sex. And, you know, some people think that what the church needs to do is change its rules on abortion and birth control and all that. That's not the problem. The problem with sex in the Roman Catholic Church is the lack of masculinity. And that's something that the Roman Catholic Church really needs to address. And along those lines, I wish they'd get rid of these costumes, you know, with the frills and the lace and that. What's wrong with sackcloth? What's wrong with, you know, the robes that the Franciscans wear? Those seem very much more ecclesiastical to me, just in my case. But these silly colors and the goofy stuff they wear, it's embarrassing, personally. You know, Paul said that the first qualification of an overseer is to be above reproach. Let's look in Titus chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. He says it twice. The Catholic bishops have quite a long way to go before we can seriously regard them as above reproach. And I think that's the first thing that the next Pope needs to address, and I hope that he does. So anyway, this is the end of my first podcast from Crow Hill, and be interested in hearing your comments. You can reach me at gkrehbiel, G-K-R-E-H-B-I-E-L, at gmail.com. Thanks so much.